that made you paranoid.
That, and
so he took all the specimens and he threw them in the goddamn river. Every one of them.
Yeah, I didn't get caught throwing them in the
Are you
river.
Kidding? How many thousands of dollars worth of specimens you threw in the river, Dumbo?
Well, that's almost as bad as my wife and Sherry Dean was a half and half. And when Peter was born, my wife had a little bad time of it. And she said, Dick, do you know anywhere I can get a maid? I said, as a matter of fact, I do. It was wintertime. And I said, I'll get her for you, but she's a little peculiar. Bonnie says, my wife is straight, you know, square. She said, how peculiar. And I said, well, actually, she's a maid. So she said, anybody. Well, Dean cleaned everything, all the windows, everything, and he whistled around. And my young boy, we only had Ricky then, followed him all the way around. And finally, Ricky said to him, are you a man? And Bonnie started to say something. And then she said, no, let you swear your own beef this time, Dean. And Dean turned to him and said, no, I'm a young boy. Which I thought was good. But getting back to throwing this stuff away, my wife had moved my tattoo joint, stencils, machines, and everything a half a dozen times. And Dean, he said, honest to goodness, how many times have we moved this stuff? And she said, Bonnie said, well, he'll never use it again. She was hoping I never would. So I threw it away. Machine, stencil, jeez, not like the one out of my gourd. What the hell is the matter with you?
They didn't want you back in show business again.
I had that feeling that was part of it.
You were talking at lunch today about the John T. Hutchins company and the fact that it was operated as a real pitch show. I've never seen a pitch show in the sense that it's still in...
Well, I have a picture of it.
I have a picture of it. I don't have
sure.
it.
But when did pit shows as operated as pit shows begin to disappear? I mean, that seems to be...
Well, I don't know. Carl Authors was a pit show.
How late was it out?
Well, I don't know. Francis came. I was playing Richmond, Virginia with a pit show. And she came in and she said, hi, I'm Francis Lothar. Have you ever heard of my husband, Carl? I said, sure. And she said, I thought this was Carl's show for a minute, but she said, I must be going crazy because his show is still in the barn, at least everything but the top. She said, Walter Wannis got that. I said, you got anything you want to sell, Mrs. Lothar? And she said, yeah. She said, why don't you come out and visit me? So I went out and I bought a lot of banners off her, and it was a pit show.
Can you describe the Hutchins? What was the name of it?
John T. Hutchins.
Somebody got shot when he touched the...
You know, that's so strange that I'm at the Smithsonian Institute. Because one day we left Alexandria, Virginia, going to Shinglehouse, Pennsylvania. Talk about tapped out. I didn't know whether I had enough gas or anything to get there. And you know how those hills are outside of Williamsport where you go up and down, up and down? Well, this truck I had was a good truck with one exception. If you put her down, not in grandma, but in second, and raced up a hill, it'd blow out a quart of oil. And too many of those, you know, and you're out of oil. But it had this bad habit, and nobody seemed to know why it would do it. So I got to the top of this mountain, and there was a truck stop. So I pulled in there, and all we had money enough for was a bottle of pop and some of these crackers with peanut butter in them. Mm. And I'm filthy dirty from being underneath adjusting those vacuum brakes. Oh, my God. I hadn't shaved. I looked like the wrath of God. And it said on the side of the trailer, not the truck, J.T. Hutchins Modern Museum, Cassville, Missouri. And the possum bellies and ropes hanging out and stakes and everything else, you know. And this kid said, how are things on the circus? I said, circus? What circus? He said, out there. I said, what does that say on the side of that truck, young man? He said, Modern Museum. I said, I'll have you know I'm the curator of antiquities at the Smithsonian Institution, and I resent you saying that I'm with a circus. Well, he apologized, followed me all the way out to the truck and everything else.
Brady used to use the Smithsonian too.
We all will, but after this shock, watch what I do.
My last engagement was at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C.
Nobody will ever believe you that.
When I think of the references in those days that were made to the Smithsonian Institution, I'm wondering what part we had in helping it to achieve its present fame.
Was that, what did you, your donations?
No, have a telegram.
Everybody had something that has either dumbfounded, baffled the scientists.
Oh, this is the only way when you have people send you telegrams from Washington.
Yeah. You do that.
What was it? What? Remember that telegram that you got from the Smithsonian a while ago?
Yes, Neil, it must be back for the 25th of this month for scientific study and research. They always wanted her back.
Yeah.
But we know that they really wanted her back to the sector, not.
They never did get her, but now they've got the.
This one I've got to tell you, this is really a story. I bought a truck off a friend of mine because I'd blown a rod in my Jeep station. So we're going down the highway, going into Trenton, New Jersey, and I'm going along about 50, 60. I take my foot off the gas. And my God, I've thrown another rod. And we're on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Well, I also had a Siamese cat named Cooley. So the only way Cooley would go potty is in, because he'd been trained to go in kitty litter. And I couldn't find any kitty litter anywhere. And I take him out in the ground, on the dirt, and he'd just sit there and go, and he's getting cross-eyed, you know. So I have him in, and I pull off. I said, we got to do something. We're running low on gas. So I pull into this gas station. You hear me coming 5 miles away. Filthy, dirty, hadn't shaved, you know. I'm trying to, what the hell am I going to do with this truck with the rod? I'm clack, 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 clack. Well, I pulled in and the fella said, boy, you're having quite a time of it, aren't you? I said, yeah. I said, you got any of that stuff that you scatter down when you spill oil? He said, I guess so. He said, geez, you aren't going to put that in that truck. You'll ruin it. And I said, to quiet that rod. I said, no. I said, it's for my kitty. He said, you're what? I said, for my kitty, cat. He said, what? I said, for my pussy. And he looked at me. And I said, would you sell me a pound of it? And he said, I'll give it to you. So I put it in the pie, in the cake pan, and I picked the cat up and sat him in it, and immediately he went potty. And the guy looking at me, probably figured I was real dingy. I guess I was, to be traveling with a Siamese cat.
Certainly.
Can we get you to do a pitch for the Geek Show just so we can get a record?
Oh, my pitch for the Geek Show, it's not even good. We had a geek, you know, in the pit, and they'd say he's going to reach in there, and he's going to take that chicken, stick it in his mouth, bite off the head, the blood will spread about, and it'll spit out the eyeballs. It'll, you know, really icky stuff.
I'll do the one on Baku. That I had, the last geek that I had, Glamming Geek.
I just shut up. You got a big mouth. You spelled four reels of you. Bullshit.
All right, I won't say it.
I'm only kidding. I'm only serious.
But no, you're serious. I am talking.
That's okay, Richard. This is your last shot. Take your best shot at it.
Okay. Well, the way we work is probably similar to the way you worked at night. I don't know. Fred, did you use the bass drum and torch lights?
No.
Oh, we used torches and the bass drum, did-da-boom, to bring the tip, and I'd hold up the chicken. I say, it's time to feed Baku the wild man. Gather down here. I'm sure you've heard about him by now. He's half Negro and half Jivaro Indian. He comes from the rainforest deep within the heart of the Ecuadorian rainforest, Baku the wild man. Now, Baku has one peculiarity, one fetish. He likes his meat fresh. Of course, we all do. But to make sure that it is fresh, Baku prefers to kill it himself and eat it raw.
And so in just a very few short minutes, we're going to throw that chicken into the pit. Baku will pounce on it, tear it limb from limb, and, you know, suck the warm blood from its throbbing body. And I said, "Here, it's too bad you weren't here last night. Some boys brought in a rat. Had long yellow teeth, and it must have been that long. They threw it in the pit. Baku eyed that rat. The rat eyed Baku and had the rat, killed it, and ate it. And sometimes we use water moccasins. We alternate. And the water moccasin will go back and forth, and Baku will stare at it with his little beady eyes, and quicker than an Indian mongoose, he'll have it and eat it. But this time, we're going to feed him with the chicken. All right, now crowd up there, get tickets. If you want to go now, we're going to throw it in the pit. Now, don't throw it in yet.
Business like show business.
So that's
like
the
no business I know. Even with a turkey that you know will fold, your geek may eat it and it may be cold.
Well, now, speaking of turkeys.
Oh, you always got a turkey.
They wouldn't sell me any more chickens. And I can't blame them,
frankly, Scarlett.
Right, really, it was a disgusting show. I don't deny that for a moment. And I went all over this farm region trying to buy chickens, telling them it was for an alligator that had been broken in to eat feathers. And I said, once they start on birds, that's all they ever want to eat. As one farmer took pity on me, and he said, "You have the wild man down at the fair, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "You've been lying, haven't you?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, listen, could you use turkeys?" I said, "Yep, I sure could." He said, "Well, there's a hatchery," and he told me how to get there. He said, he'll probably sell you some turkeys. So I went down there, and I explained to the fella the alligator bit, and he smiled. I think he knew who I was. Probably had seen the show. And he said, "Well, I'll tell you what," he said, "would it make any difference if they were crippled?" I said, "No, as long as they're alive, that's the important thing." He said, "Okay, I'll sell them to you." I think he said $0.50 a piece. Well, have you ever seen a half-grown turkey? They look like buzzards. They got long red necks. And of course, my geek was an alcoholic. I never saw him eat anything other than the blood of the chicken, and he ate the heart and the liver, and he lived on a gallon of Muscatel a day, and he was asleep in the pit. So I threw the turkeys in. I thought he'd be thrilled to pieces. And two of them jumped up on his knees, and I shook him. I said, "Red, wake up, look at this." And he woke up and he thought he was dead and the buzzards eaten him. And we had to throw the sidewall over to hold him down. Threw him right into the DT, shrieking and screaming. Oh my God.
How many chickens?
Shrieking, screaming, you put buzzards on your knee?
How many chickens would you go through in a day or a week?
I'll be honest with you, the only place that I was ever able to work the chickens was in Homestead. And then I told you about the snatch that we took in Huntington, Pennsylvania, because of the snake.
No, I don't think you did.
Well, Hellman came to me and he said, "Do you know this is tougher to patch than the girl show?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Now, Huntington is a tough spot." He said, "Can you control that guy?" Sure. I said, "Yeah, I think so." And he said, "Now, thinking isn't going to get it, Dave." He said, "This guy's been around me before and he's nothing but heat." I said, trust me, Van, it'll be all right. He said, okay. So we went in, and he started ranging with the tip, jumping out of the pit, which is strictly a no-no, chasing him out. And I went in a couple of times, I said, "Red, listen, cool it, okay?" I said, "Now you're going to get kicked over, and we're both going to be in trouble." So they keep saying, kill something, you're supposed to be a wild man. So finally, in desperation, he picked up a snake that was sick and bit its head off. And then the fit hit the Shan. The SPCA man had been following me around just waiting. And he asked who owned the show. And of course, half a dozen people weren't too glad to point me out to them. So it was a setup, and we went before the Justice of the Peace, which was a woman about 10:30 at night. And she wanted $250. And I tried the pitch, a pity pitch.
that he was half Ivaro Indian, half Negro, half white. Neither the Indians wanted him, the white people didn't want him, and the Indians didn't want him, but the Negroes didn't want him. She wasn't buying it. He has no education, the only way he has of making a living. She wasn't going to buy it. So finally I used the, they never read us the Miranda Act. They never swore us to tell the truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God. Now, I'll be honest with you, I won't put my hand on the Bible and lie. I don't care how big a Jackie I'm in. That's something I will not do. So I gave him the bit about the Schick injector razor tape. I said he actually didn't bite the head off. The snake was going to die. And the guy from the SPCA said, why don't you take it out back then, chop its head off? I said, what the hell would be theatrical about that? Who would pay any money to do that? I said, Red asked me for permission. And when they got down to $10, I paid it.
I was proud of you.
We got back on the lot. I'm talking too much.
No, you're not. Go ahead.
We got back on the lot, and Cushing, because I didn't have a girl, the elephant skin man was working the sword box, and Freddie Harris was lecturing me. Selling the sword bond. We're going in those days for silver donation, anything above a nickel. And Bob said to me, Dick, he said, we're getting clipped on this sword box, you know. I said, well, yeah. I was giving them 25% each, and I was taking 50%. I said, how do you figure it? He said, well, by the way he's talking, he won't say anything. When they give him a dime, but when they give him a quarter, he'll say, thank you very much. He said, I can see inside you. So I told Freddie, you lying! I wouldn't cheat you. Yeah, hell, he wouldn't. So he said, where did you hear this? I said, well, who would I hear it from? Goddamn Cushing, that's where you heard it from. So he went out, and he was packing up his stuff, and Cushing walked by, and you know the tube we use in the electric chair? He reached over and hit Cushing over the head with the fluorescent tube. So somebody came to the trailer and said, Dick, Freddie hit Bob over the head with a fluorescent tube, and he said, he's got glass on the top of his head, you better come on out, looks pretty serious. So I went out, and Bob was drunk per usual, and I picked the glass out of his head, he was sitting in the tattoo joint, and I washed it off with alcohol, and Freddie's going on, so he had the bag of change from his magic pitch, and he came down, God damn ye, I'll fix ye. And I figured, well, they're both the same size. Let them go at it. They're both drunk. Let them get it out of their system. So Cushing hit Freddie, and he did something to his leg. So we took him back into the behind the Punch and Judy and laid him out on his cot. And it sobered him up, that's for sure. But some Mark kid out front had seen the jackpot. And he went and he got this state trooper. And he'd been down to the geek show twice, and now he's at the sideshow. And he said to me, what's going on in here? You beating up a little old man. I said, what little old man? I don't see any little old man, do you? He looked at Cushing, the blood and the scars all over his bald head. He said, what happened to you? And before Cushing could answer, I said, a light bulb fell out of the light strip and hit him on the head. He said, yeah. He said, where's this little old man? And the kid is swearing uphill and down there is a little old man, and Red's sitting on the inside stage. And he's drunk, and he said, God damn FF punk, trying to finger the effing carnies. And I said, oh, gee. And the cop turned to him, and he said, look, one more word out of you, and you're going to jail. And I said, yes, and I'll help you load him up. And he turned to me and he said, look, if I come down here one more time during the run of this fair, so help me God, I'll throw you under the jail. Do you understand? I said, yes, sir. Absolutely. It'll be in more trouble. So after he left, we got Freddie out and we took him to the hospital. And I told Cushing he was going to have to pay for it.
That's the end of the story?
That's the end of the story.
I was asking about the number of chickens.
I love that.
Fred, Bob. How did you get your chickens? How many did you go through in the course of the day?
What was our record, do you think?
35, I think. The big day in Thorpe, if I recall. We had a slight disposal problem. It was a street fair. We had no place to put them. What?
The cook house.
We were all hopscotching, and there was no cookhouse.
But not only that, there was 110 in the shade.
Yeah, oh,
it was. By the end of the day, I don't think any cookhouse.
They were a little strange,
yeah.
A little heavy.
Now Thorpe was the only place I ever played. From the time you opened, you scarcely had time to make an opening, and you had the top filled. It was just incredible.
That was a street fair?
Yeah. It was the 4th of July in the center of a very prosperous Polish farming community.
Or Thorpe where?
Wisconsin.
Thorpe, Wisconsin?
Yeah. And these are the kind of people for which were famous in the Midwest. They put up a $20,000 barn while the families were still living in sod huts. They were the most superb farmers, and they really... The families paid for it, but they had money to spend, and they did spend it. And talk about flat stores. Remember the two semi-trailers full of not just ordinary wheels, but gambling equipment, such as you'd see only in a big casino, all set up in
big
the
big sixes, skillets,
yeah.
Lay downs.
When you listen to Fred giving the Geek Show, do you remember parts of it that he's forgotten?
I mean, he's covered most of everything.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
The only trouble he has is getting rid of those 35 chickens.
What do you do with yours?
But,
you know what those are? About 25, 35 cents a piece. Just think of it.
Yeah.
Now the program's deep. Didn't handle it.
Have to ship the Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, there's an idea. Their connection right there. Yeah.
I have a picture of me and the Colonel. I've got a picture of me and the Colonel.
Yeah, he's out of Vegas this year, too.
Yeah, I was in Vegas. He was in Vegas.
It'd be a great sales point. Only used for a few minutes by a little old geek.
And then we're pumped full of those 35 spices.
In those days, you didn't have Purdue's and Holly Farms and places like that raising chickens. Every farmer had chickens.
You never had a supply problem.
I really did
have a problem trying to get chickens.
You did?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I had to go to Cleveland.
You would have a problem if they were plentiful.
No, I wouldn't.
I've had a problem getting chickens or rabbits.
He's the only guy I know that had crippled turkeys.
I've had trouble getting animals just to feed the snakes. I've had to buy the prize winning rabbit in an exhibit barn for $15 or $20, and a kid tell me how to take care of it and what it liked, you know, and throw it in there with a python. I never told the kid, you know. I just said, fine, we'll take good care of it. We'll pull it out of a hat in the magic show. The snake would eat it.
The National Zoo and their Birds of Prey cage, they throw in frozen rats. I don't know where they get them. But they're all frozen.
Really?
Well, when I get good bound rabbits or something for my snakes, I knock them in the head and freeze them. Freeze them whole, and then I don't have to worry about looking for them for another month.
You hit the snakes in the head and freeze them?
No, but I might chew in a few minutes.
No, he sneaks up on the back of them and mugs them. Commodore Richards.
Booby Reynolds.
Pickleball.
Booby.
Don't stop.
This was a performance. This was entertainment. I mean, it was the presentation. It wasn't what you actually saw.
But they were pretty good. Some of the Greeks.
You were pretty good, huh?
But is it the words basically that would appeal? To
yeah,
the
you
words?
Created you created an illusion there. You were selling a
curiosity,
violence.
You were selling an illusion, and the and how well you presented it. A man doing card tricks can do the same trick and it goes over flat, or if he's good, you think you've seen something.
Excuse me, one more.
Yeah.
God, thank God.
But I doubt seriously that you could do this in the present time to actually
I think you can do it.
Right on
I was
right on your customers.
That
right
possibly
on all of this dirt and filth and so slime and chicken feathers and everything else. You remember how we pull that tent right down on their heads?
Yeah.
I wrote that in this thing, and that's no exaggeration. We'd have all of the side poles out except just the corner poles. And all of a sudden, he would come down racing out to me and he'd say, "This is it. I'm not taking this any longer." And at that moment, the geek starts to roust the center poles with his shoulders. See, you remember?
Right.
And all of a sudden, I could turn around and I'd see that the center's going right
the whole top coming. Yeah. You'd think it was tear down night.
Corners, grab one of these things and start. And of course, the whole top came. We'd have a tip of a couple hundred people sometimes in there, right down on their heads, screaming and hollering and chicken feathers every direction. Why, that thing was a headache. That thing was.
They loved it though, didn't they?
It was, yeah, but it was not a show. It was a disease. That's what it
was. Was that what the rest is? Yeah. Did you do a roust in your geek show? And was that a common thing to do?
No.
Did you try to bring down the tent? Was that something that you
know? Waldo. I work with Waldo.
Oh, the guy who swallowed the mice?
Sure.
Yeah.
I used to regurgitate it.
Swallow the mice?
You take a live mouse and go,
you're kidding.
And then he'd swallow it and he'd put a goldfish down and he'd regurgitate it alive again.
And he was on a regular show in the late 40s.
Yeah, I worked with him.
You worked with him? Was he
now,
your
those
geek?
Are the days when students
he killed were. Himself. He gassed himself.
Yeah,
how?
Working act.
He was in love with some girl.
Romance.
She didn't go for that rat crap.
Why couldn't you work at this show, Fred? Instead of using chickens, use raw meat, like these little ribeye steaks.
Yes. You remember once in a while we would get slaughtered with chickens and put a big chunk of meat, a smelly old chunk, on a pitchfork.
Yeah.
And parade the midway with it, see, and then circle around and come back. Okay. But it just wasn't there. The steam wasn't
out. Did you ever see a guy bite a pig to death?
Never.
Bite a pig?
No, that's too strong.
Now, they had a little suckling pig, and I seen a guy bite it, literally. For the week was he'd sit around and just take a bite the pig and just bite him to death.
What we would finally do is work with mud.
But he wasn't
sometimes.
Jewish.
Do you remember a mud glom that we did a few times?
Yeah, I try not to. But
well, we got slaughtered with everything, and that was the last resort. And you'd spend about 10 minutes. This is part of the valley. We'd pace it off, and not a word, see, except once in a while. Is this the spot? No, not there. That wasn't it. And we'd argue back and forth with a big shovel, see. Finally bring out the bucket of water, and then start with the axe on the ground and start digging, see. And then by that time, you'd have a little pretty good tip there, and explain to these people that that these people worship, just as they do in India by lying upon spikes, so do they worship in Abyssinia by feeding upon mud. And it was a dead issue. The thing never would get off the ground. It was desperation. And you know, it had no appeal, that's all. It's got to be throbbing and quivering.
I've seen that. Last year I saw a kid, somebody broke in. It was his first year. He geeked, no glomin, of course, you know, just in the pit, snake pit. But he did a fantastic job. He had the face makeup, you know.
Yeah.
And he would look at the girls as they come by, and he'd look and go, pat on the ground, like, come sit down beside me. And he had the baby rattlers and the thing, you know. And he, I guess he'd take out a baby rattler and go, for a quarter. You pitched him a quarter. But he was very good. He roused him at the right time, you know, and jump out at him. He worked it very well. Somebody broke him in real good, his uncle, I think. And,
did you have any heat over such a show as that, or no?
No, he didn't. Like I say, he didn't glom anything.
No,
but
I wondered even then, if you exploit a human being like that, maybe you'd have some problems. No,
Now and then somebody would say something. I know his aunt had been in the pit the year before, and he said something to him, his uncle was telling me. But he pulled the police aside, and the lady said, look, you know, it's just an act, and I work here. And it calmed it down. As long as you don't have him chained down.
Puts his Humberg hat on and puts his diamond ring on and say, do you realize I'm a thespian of the stage?
If you chain them down, you have
the
problems. But
that.
They're running in there.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Not too bad.
I'm really chained.
Remember, though, you knew Harry.
Sure, I knew Harry, yeah.
And I took you in the show, and you edged back as Harry did his stuff, you know.
He was
a good actor.
The shorty didn't show up one time, and I had to hire a colored lad who was his main interest was in piano playing. So they got smart to this thing, the town people did, because he was also a rum hound, and he would go down there and play the piano at night after the show. So I got all ready to fold up the thing on Saturday night, and I saw about 20 guys standing out here, and one of them came over to me and he said, look, you've had a very good week here. Now, we'd like a little enjoyment ourselves. I said, what's the story? What do you want? He said, we'd like to remove that that wild girl you've got in there and take her down to the tavern down here because she's a great piano player, or he is. Well, look, I says, let's not do anything like that. Now, let's try it. So I thought I had them all conned out of this thing completely after quite a long story. And all of a sudden, 20 guys appeared out of nowhere. See, and lifted that jig geek right over the top of the pit, all in makeup and everything, and the way come down sideways and everything else and dragged him off to town. And I couldn't figure how in the world I'm ever going to get this guy back or what I'm going to do next. And discussed it anyway, because he was not too reliable. He was always boozed up all the time. And so I went to bed in the trailer that night, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, I heard a scuffle out there, and they'd carried him back. And later I heard they'd held a jug of gin right up to him while he's playing the piano, and a marvelous piano player, too, see. And the guy passed out right in the midway, and so I was sick of it. I was tired and everything else, and I didn't even get up or anything like that. But I got up in the morning, and the guy looks like he's dead. He really did, and all in makeup yet, complete. Right, passed out. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. You know, I don't want to have the finger put on me. So I thought, well, let's see. There's a place over here. Maybe I can kind of drag him over. And I picked him up, and the guy kind of groaned, like, for instance. So all I could see, he wasn't quite dead yet. And that was the answer. He finally got up. But I got sick of it. That was about the last spot of the season, and I just closed the show. That was about it.
Is that your last spot here?
The last one?
That was your last spot altogether, wasn't it?
Oh, no, no. I opened up again with a reliable geek next year, but this guy was not at all. He was a headache. Lindsay Black was his name. I remember that.
Remember his name?
Yeah, very appropriate name, yes.
We've been talking that you mentioned that you started to do openings on Bobby's show, or do the blow-off on Bobby's show.
Yeah.
Can we get you just, can we make a recording of your blow-off pitch?
I don't know if I can remember
all. It's so nice to have
it's
a geek
basically
around
like
the house.
I use a very fine old name.
Uh-huh.
The only way I hear it is if it's...
Go ahead, Nancy, do your act.
If we've got something live back then, I'll say it's alive. If it's not, you know, I just leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically, ladies and gentlemen, in every show of this kind, it's customary to have an extra added attraction during a brief intermission. Now, I realize that some of you may have just come in and you've seen 2, maybe 3 acts. Let me assure you that our show is continuous and you will see a full and complete show. You'll see everything on the inside that you see advertised outside on the brightly painted pictorial banners. Got a snake charmer, fire eater, girl in the electric chair, and lots of other acts to entertain you with. Now, I've been in this business for a great number of years, and I've had the pleasure of introducing on these stages such unique and unusual attractions as Francesco Lentini, man who was born with 3 legs, 4 feet, and 16 toes. Betty Lou Williams, a girl who was born with her baby sister growing out of her stomach. She had 3 arms, 4 legs, and 2 bodies. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the attraction behind this curtain is just as unusual and unique as the two that I have just mentioned. While you need not be an adult to go back there, we do suggest you be of a mature mind. Now, there is a small admission charge for which I do not apologize. Only a quarter, a mere 25 cents. Ladies and gentlemen, it is alive, so if you'd like to step up and hand your quarters to Jimmy and go on back, thank you. And you just turn around, walk down the other end of the stage, and let him go.
That's good. That's great.
That is a good one.
We got to get going.
Oh, we should
get going.
Oh, well, what time is it?
Oh, that's right. You've got to go all the way to Virginia.
Well, yeah, I've got to come back.
You better bring some more of that coffee.
No,
I'm going to do it, John.
Well, you'd still be working if you were at a state fair.
You sure you don't want to stay at the hotel tonight?
Not much.
Well, those animals better eat.
The animals.
What happens to the animals if they don't eat?
They eat somebody else. Do you need a ride back? Or?
Jesus, here's a guy, college education. What happens if animals don't eat? They die.
They go hungry first.
Yeah, then they get pissed.
Yeah, you want to take the leopard that eat a couple of days.
How big is your snake?
I got 2 of them about 9 feet, my biggest.
You got them here?
No, I live 103 miles from here.
Do you have those bite back?
Oh, the car, right.
Is there anybody going anywhere near I don't think I'll go through the problem staying here tomorrow night. No, I don't think I'll go through the hassle.
Yeah, I can. We can give you a ride.
Cool this night.
Well, I've got some room.
Yeah.
We can take the blood goods.
We could have some bread.
Well, yeah, but we can take the blood goods home Monday night.
You don't go anywhere
near
there, do you?
Okay. Yeah, it's on the way.
It is.
Well, all I can say is delightful evening, conversing with all of you lovely people.
I
and in the famous words of P.T. Barnum, who once said, the world is a stage, so rob it.
That's what he said.
Never gave him a dinner.
The famous words of Oliver Fagworthy. It was not only his name, but it was his attitude toward life.